This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
No impeachment votes. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, October 16, glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says there will be no impeachment vote by the full House, at least for now. Here are the explanation.
12 Democratic presidential candidates took to the stage for their latest debate, discussing issues like health insurance and the economy.
In sports, the Washington Nationals are headed to the World Series for the first time, completing a four-game sweep of the St. Louis Cardinals last night.
And parents obsessing over tracking their kids' grades in real time.
Yes, a lot of school districts across the country are requiring teachers to input grades into online gradebooks as they grade assignments and tests and quizzes, and parents and kids alike have access to them. And for some parents, that's driving them a little crazy. They're finding that it's hard not to look.
Julie Jargon at the Wall Street Journal on the pros and cons of monitoring grades online on a daily basis in some cases. She's here in about 20 minutes. The Democratic presidential debates have a new theme. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren playing defense. Ms. Warren, atop the polls with former Vice President Joe Biden, was pressed by rivals last night about how she would pay for a universal health care proposal and her plan to raise taxes on the rich.
Let me be clear on this. Costs will go up for the wealthy. They will go up for big corporations and for middle class families. They will go down. I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle class families.
On another subject, most of the candidates denounced Mr. Trump's decision to pull troops from northern Syria, saying he's endangered our Kurdish allies. Hawaii Congressman Tulsi Gabbard.
Donald Trump has the blood of the Kurds on his hand, but so do many of the politicians in our country from both parties who have supported this ongoing regime change war in Syria that started in 2011.
The 12 hopefuls during the CNN New York Times debate were united in pushing for the impeachment of President Trump. Also, Mr. Biden, Ms. Warren, and Senator Bernie Sanders all faced questions about their age. Each is in their 70s. Meanwhile, do Democratic voters want a period of calm and order post-Trump or a crusade that promises more disruption of the status quo? That's the basic question to be considered, at least as voters weigh their preferences between the two frontrunners, former Vice President Joe Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. More from Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, how do you see it?
The race looks more and more, at least at the moment, like a two-person race, Joe Biden versus Elizabeth Warren, and then, I don't know, 18 or so others in the Democratic field. So in that context, people tend to look at the Biden versus Warren choice as a moderate versus a progressive, and it is that. But it also struck me that it's something else as well. The basic message is, it's not just ideological, it's philosophical from these two candidates. Joe Biden is essentially saying, what we need after 4 years of Donald Trump is to return to normalcy, to go back to the way things were before he came and shook everything up and created controversy and consternation. And Elizabeth Warren essentially says, no, returning to normal, that's not good enough, because we need to shake things up too in big ways, going after the capitalist system. And she's essentially proposing more disruption, just the kind of disruption that progressive Democrats want.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting point you said, because she, although she doesn't like President Trump, obviously, saying he's not really the start of our problems right now. These problems were around before he took office.
Well, exactly. And so by her standards, returning to what the foreign policy types call status quo ante, which is what was prevailing before things got all shook up, isn't the answer. That's not good enough, because she is saying, as you suggest, things were sliding downhill. The system was corrupt. Big money was running politics in both parties. Big businesses were running roughshod over average Americans. And we need to change all of those things. And therefore, it's not just about getting rid of Donald Trump. It's about making making systemic changes. I think the Biden proposition is much more along the lines of, the system needed to be updated, it needs to be improved, we need to keep adding on to things we accomplished in my 8 years in the Obama administration as vice president, but we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think it's a message that's designed to take advantage of what I suspect the Biden campaign thinks is just a kind of national fatigue with President Trump. People agree with some of what he does, disagree with some of what he does, but everybody's just kind of worn out by the constant stirring and consternation and controversy. And the Biden response to that is, I'm your antidote to that kind of thing.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Biden versus Warren, A Difference of Philosophy, Not Just Policy. Explain how that approach impacts the policies that those two support.
Well, they kind of go hand in hand, I guess I would say. You know, Elizabeth Warren proposes some big shakeup. She wants to throw out Obamacare and introduce Medicare for all. She wants to not just raise taxes on wealthy people, but impose a brand new wealth tax. She wants to go much further in going after American businesses. And I think Joe Biden's answer is, in each case, more moderate. It's essentially, let's keep Obamacare and improve it. Let's raise taxes on the rich to pay for social programs, but not get carried away with it. You know, let's have gun control, but not get carried away by calling for what some others have asked for, which is a mandatory buyback of assault weapons. And so you have Joe Biden, by extension, essentially saying my policies return us to a more normal world, the kind that prevailed when, you know, center-left Democrats were running the country. And she's basically saying we need to move further left than that. That's my argument for a more disruptive presidency than Joe Biden would give you.
Is there any polling that indicates what voters want if these are the two approaches here?
Well, there's voters, and then there's the people who are going to vote in Democratic primaries, and that's really where this question gets interesting. I mean, we've asked people various ways which kind of approach they prefer, and the idea of picking a Democrat who wants bigger, bolder solutions, who wants to shake things up, is gaining more ground, I would guess, among Democratic primary voters. When we asked in September, 56% to 40% of Democratic primary voters said they'd prefer a candidate who proposes big and expensive programs, even if they're going to be harder to enact. But if you ask other voters, people in the middle, independent voters, and those may be the people who decide the election, they say essentially the opposite. They prefer somebody whose programs are smaller and more digestible and don't cost as much. And so what's the important reading here? Is it hardcore Democratic primary voters or soft voters in the middle? One group votes in Democratic primaries and one group doesn't. So we'll just have to see. There's a long way to go, and I think attitudes on this are still malleable, but that's where it is right now.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, what's longer, your watch list or your reading list? For me, it's definitely my reading list, but there are not enough hours in the day. Then I found Blinkist. Blinkist is the app that condenses the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books down to 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. It's great on a commute. I like it as a refresher for books like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm catching up right now on all kinds of history that I never learned in school. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning. Try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said there will be no full House vote for now to authorize an impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Democratic leadership has been asking members in battleground districts ahead of the 2020 election what they think about taking a House floor vote to start an impeachment inquiry.
We're not here to call bluffs. We're here to find the truth, to uphold the Constitution of the United States. This is not a game for us. This is deadly serious.
Meanwhile, Vice President Mike Pence and President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, will not be turning over documents related to the impeachment inquiry by House Democrats. The Office of Management and Budget also did not comply yesterday
with a subpoena for documents about the delay in nearly $400 million in aid for Ukraine. The White House and its allies denied that the money was withheld as part of a quid pro quo in exchange for investigations by Ukraine. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to last night's Democratic presidential debate featured a fresh target for criticism, Elizabeth Warren. The Massachusetts senator is sharing the lead in recent polling with Joe Biden and the scrutiny that comes with it. Rivals accused Warren of ducking questions about the cost of Medicare for All and her signature wealth tax plan in an attempt to derail her rising campaign. Candidates also took aim at President Trump and his decision to pull U.S. troops from Syria. Joe Biden says it was the wrong move.
We have ISIS. It's going to come here. They are going to, in fact, damage the United States of America. That's why we got involved in the first place and not ceded the whole area to Assad and to the Russians.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration dispatched senior officials to Turkey to press for an end to its military offensive as Moscow began to fill a void created by departing U.S. troops. Trump says Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will travel to Turkey with Vice President Mike Pence.
Mike is getting ready to make a big trip. He'll be leaving tomorrow. We have a delegation leading today, and Mike is heading it up with Secretary Pompeo. They'll be leaving tomorrow. And we're having very strong talks with a lot of people.
Congressional leaders from both parties are set to visit the White House this afternoon for a meeting with Trump about Turkey. Tensions between the U.S. and China are ramping up after Beijing threatened to retaliate over the passage of measures in Washington aimed at supporting Hong Kong protesters. Three bills were approved by the House last night, one supporting the right of individuals to protest, another allowing for the U.S. to check on Beijing's influence over the territory, and a third aimed at preventing U.S. weapons from being used by police against protesters. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson says China will definitely take strong countermeasures in response to the wrong decisions by the U.S.
The pitch, fastball, is hit in the air to left center field. Robles calling for it. He's under it waiting, and he makes the catch! He makes the catch! Bang! Zoom down the fireworks!
That's how it sounded on WJFK as the Washington Nationals moved on to the World Series with a 7-4 win over the St. Louis Cardinals. The Nats completed the NLCS sweep and will take on either the Yankees or Astros. In the ALCS, the Astros lead 2-1 after beating New York 4-1 last night.
The game was, I think, 7-0 after the first inning. It was over before it started.
Quite the sweep.
Sort of like the series itself. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Parents of middle and high schoolers are facing a new anxiety, whether or not to check their kids' grades in real time. Julie Jargon, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, has a look at the change and its pros and cons. Julie, what's happening here?
Yeah, so a lot of school districts across the country are requiring teachers to input grades into online gradebooks as they grade assignments and tests and quizzes. And parents and kids alike have access to them through either online portals or apps. Sometimes they receive text notifications when a new grade has been added. And for some parents, that's driving them a little crazy. They're finding that it hard not to look.
Yeah. Explain one of the anecdotes maybe that struck you as you were pulling the story together.
Well, you know, I talked to a couple of parents about, you know, how they handle this when they see that their child has gotten a bad grade. And, you know, one mom said that, you know, she saw that her son had a poor grade on an exam, and she immediately texted him about it. And, you know, he felt badly about it. And, you know, it was before he even had an opportunity to come and tell her what happened. And then I guess he came home, and then she immediately felt bad and apologized to him. And she said, what kind of horrible parent does that? I mean, she had, you know, the awareness after the fact to, you know, look at what she was doing and how she was using this app and how maybe it wasn't necessarily a healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
Another parent I spoke to said that she noticed her son was missing an assignment. And so currently in a particular class, it's showing that he's failing. He told her that he had turned the assignment in late, and she's been on him to ask his teacher, when will you update the grade to reflect this assignment? And he's just been, I guess, dragging his feet, and she's found it difficult not to intervene herself and reach out to the teacher or do something. So it's really frustrating for parents and, I think, stressful for some of the kids.
We're speaking with Julie Jargon, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece entitled, "The New Parental Obsession, Checking Kids' Grades
online. So at what point do you let the kid take full ownership of managing grades and speaking up and saying, hey, listen, mom, dad, I need some help. I'm not getting this math or something like that.
I mean, I think a lot of it depends on the particular kid. And if you have the type of kid who will do that, great. Some parents I spoke to said that they have specifically chosen not to look at online grades at all, and that they've been upfront with their kids ahead of time saying, you know, I'm not going to look at your grades. I expect you to come to me and tell me if you're struggling in a subject area, and then we'll figure out what to do about it. And for some parents, that's worked. I don't know that that works for every kid out there. You know, sometimes kids will make excuses and say, oh, the teacher didn't grade it, or something's missing, or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, it is a balance that I think every parent has to find for themselves.
There was one, I don't know, it was a parent or sort of an education expert who didn't like the idea of grades available in real time, because he said something along the lines of learning becomes a series of tasks versus a process of exercises to learn more. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I talked to, you know, this was a teacher in Seattle, and I talked to other teachers who said similar things, that, you know, parents can just get so focused, and students too, on the grades themselves, that all they care about is getting that grade up.
All right, thanks, Julie. Julie Jargon, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This Morning with Gordon Deal podcast is brought to you by Privacy.com. For me, shopping online with Privacy.com is safer. How? By using Privacy.com's virtual credit or debit cards. They protect my identity and bank info when shopping online. Remember the recent theft of financial data of millions of online shoppers from a very large online retailer? Privacy.com's virtual accounts are held to the same security standards as your bank. It's PCI DSS compliant, which makes info online secure with military-grade encryption. Privacy.com can also help you take control of your finances by setting spending limits for when you tend to order too much takeout, or by monitoring recurring payments or subscriptions. Head to privacy.com/Gordon to sign up and start shopping. As a special treat for our listeners, new customers will automatically get $5 to spend on your first purchase. Yep, that's free money to use on any online purchase. Go to privacy.com/Gordon and sign up now.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, October 16. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. No full House vote on impeachment, at least for now. Google releases its newest smartphones today. You can use motion gestures to control them. Taco Bell dumps 2 million pounds of meat after a metal shaving was found. Stocks rally on earnings news. Protesters in Hong Kong burn LeBron James jerseys over his comments about free speech. Nats to the World Series. And a 2-year-old boy's reaction when mommy didn't kiss him before she left for work. That story in about 20 minutes. President Trump has stoked his political base by touting the withdrawal of more than 1,000 U.S. troops from Syria as keeping his 2016 campaign promise to end American involvement in foreign forever wars. The problem is that the Pentagon's near simultaneous deployment of some 3,000 troops and advanced missiles to Saudi Arabia is likely to trigger an escalation with Iran that could undercut Mr. Trump's determination to get the U.S. military out of Middle East entanglements. So says Guy Taylor, national security editor at the Washington Times. Guy, explain.
I think President Trump, you know, whether he's personally willing to admit it or not, is now fully entrenched in the quicksand of U.S. foreign policy in a very complex and heavily armed Middle East. He wants to be able to tell everyone heading into the 2020 election, look, I promised I'd get America out of forever wars in the region, and by golly, I've done it. The problem is that if you look at this big picture, what is really going on is not a pullout of American forces overall. It's really a movement of American forces to different positions. And as our reporting points out in the Washington Times, it's actually an increase, not a decrease of forces and military action in the wider region. This is not being paid much attention to, though, because of the political and media hype and pushback that the president got with his announcement to pull a very small contingent of U.S. troops out of northern Syria. What we're trying to, what we have focused on in our report is that almost simultaneously, the president authorized a deployment of roughly 3,000 new troops to Saudi Arabia, as well as a host of sophisticated equipment, including a terminal high-altitude missile defense shield and several Patriot batteries, an air defense wing, all kinds of stuff now going into Saudi Arabia at the same time. And the question becomes, how is this getting the United States out of forever wars, and why is it not being paid much attention to it? And does it expose a contradiction for Trump on the campaign trail, where he's claiming, look, I'm pulling us out, when in reality, we're actually increasing assets in different areas?
Are we splitting hairs or playing some semantics guy by saying, okay, troops are out of harm's way in a conflict zone, for example, like northern Syria, but right. We're sort of just playing defense by adding troops in Saudi Arabia where there's not a conflict going on?
Okay, that is the administration's line, and, you know, it remains to be seen. There are a lot of people in the foreign policy establishment who were lined up here behind Trump and say, absolutely, we should be, these are totally different deployments. The Saudi Arabia one is more of a deterrence deployment, but let's not forget recent history, Gordon. What's important here is to pay attention to the fact that U.S. forces have really not been in Saudi Arabia since the early 2000s. They'd been there in the 1990s, think Gulf War era, but after a series of pretty nightmarish developments there, most notably the 1996 terrorist bombing of a housing complex in the Saudi city of Khobar that left 19 U.S. soldiers dead, and then the Clinton administration started pulling U.S. troops out. Remember also that al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden, himself a Saudi, later cited the American military's presence in the nation, specifically near the Muslim holy cities of Mecca and Medina, which are in Saudi Arabia, as a core motivation behind 9/11 and the Khobar Tower attacks.
We're speaking with Guy Taylor, national security editor at the Washington Times. He's written a piece entitled "Trump's Bid to End Forever Wars Undercut by Saudi Troop Deployment." The president on Friday sent 3,000 Saudi troops and heavy armor to Saudi Arabia. Ultimately, this is about Iran, right? Oil, I don't know, maybe religious dominance in the region that Iran wants to impose, right? I mean, is that where we are with this?
Yeah, I mean, what we have is President Trump reorganizing U.S. policy toward the Middle East to focus on containing Iran, putting immense pressure on the Iranian government with sanctions, and now increasingly using U.S. military power to undergird that pressure. The stated goal of the administration, which has pulled the United States out of the 2015 Obama-era nuclear deal, is to actually almost force the Iranians back to the negotiating table for a much wider, more aggressive deal that would address not only Iran's nuclear activities, but what much of the world agrees are Iran's support for militant proxy organizations and destabilizing activities in several countries of the region.
Thanks, Guy. Guy Taylor, national security editor at the Washington Times. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's no secret that we've turned ourselves completely over to technology when it comes to navigating our way around, with few of us even able to find our way home from work without Google Maps showing us the way. That, of course, has also led to some funny and not-so-funny consequences when the technology goes haywire. One town in Italy, in fact, has gotten so fed up with people getting lost or stranded thanks to Google Maps that it's trying to ban motorists from using it. The town's mayor told an Italian news agency that in his town in the Oligastra region just doesn't work with navigation apps due to its unique roads, and that old paper maps are better. He says several hikers have gone missing and many vehicles got stuck in the impossibly narrow streets of the area after being led astray by using Google Maps.
Wow.
Signs have now been erected that read, presumably in Italian, "Don't follow the directions of Google Maps."
Jeez. Well, you could just go international, just put the red circle with a line through it and Google Maps.
Yes.
Print it on it, I guess.
There you go.
Several hikers have gone missing.
Yes.
That's presumably they're using the feature where you can click like the walking icon, right?
Yeah,
on Google Maps, not the car.
I guess they are eventually found, but it's a strain on the resources of the town to get these people out from where they're stuck and stranded.
I bet it's not the only one.
What's that?
Some of those medieval towns.
Oh, yeah.
Those quirky little side streets, cobblestone walkways and stuff.
Yeah. I feel like any of these places that are like over 200 years old, it's probably not a good idea. You know, you're way up on the side of a mountain somewhere. It's not a good idea to be trying to use any kind of technology there.
Meanwhile, my wife and I sometimes, or at least me, use this as a competitive tool.
Yeah.
So yesterday we had to take her car to the local car dealer in nearby Old Bridge, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And so we left from home because I was going to pick her up and bring her back after she dropped her car off.
Right.
Well, we took different paths.
Okay.
Of course, it's competition to see who can get there fastest. She went her stubborn way that she knew, you know, and didn't research it. I used Google Maps and beat her by at least a full minute.
So in this case, Google Maps wins.
I trash talked the whole way home, and she could do nothing about it except sit quietly in the passenger seat.
Good for you.
So thank you, Google Maps.
And we know, Gordon, that recreational marijuana use is legal in more and more places in this country, but if you're keeping score at home, Florida is not one of them. As such, if one of your buddies makes off with your legal stash, you're pretty much on your own. That fact was apparently lost on a man who repeatedly called his local police department to report that his roommate had stolen his marijuana. A deputy for the Pasco County Sheriff's Office posted a Twitter response to the man's call Saturday night. Stop calling. In the video posted, the deputy explains that he was tasked with calling the man back to break it to him that there's nothing police can do about his stolen weed and that he needs to stop calling about it. A sheriff's office spokesman says no charges were filed against the caller.
Oh, wow. Count your blessings.
Yes. Well, I think what they're basically saying there, in not so many words, was if you keep calling, we're going to have to go to your house to stop you from calling, at which time we're going to probably arrest you for all the weed.
Consider this a nice break.
Yes.
Go play the lottery. It's your lucky day.
Exactly. Your friendly neighborhood police officers.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
When it comes to keeping your small business's valuable information safe, Dell Small Business Technology Advisors can recommend tailored security solutions like servers, storage, networking. Plus, right now, get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. Running your own small business is a big challenge, but with the right partner, it's a lot easier. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Parents can be the most important influence on a teen considering college, but how they talk to their children about all of their choices can determine whether these teens ultimately succeed or fail. MarketWatch put together a list of mistakes to avoid during these talks. One, paying too close attention to the college rankings lists. Students already feel enough pressure around the college choosing process, and the rankings don't correspond to what your child is trying to accomplish. Blindly following the rankings can cause your child to pursue a host of choices that might look good to society at large, but will be a bad fit for your child's specific circumstance. Number two, using your criteria to select college options, not your child's. That's a setup for a bad experience. Instead, help your child define what is important and what is a non-starter. And number three, forcing your child to go to college. Research indicates that when students attended school just to appease a parent, 74% of the students dropped out or transferred. We'll discuss three more mistakes to avoid next hour. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
More than a dozen Democratic presidential candidates participated in a spirited debate last night over health care, taxes, gun control, and impeachment. Senator Elizabeth Warren found that she's now a clear target for attacks, and her many plans are being subjected to sharper scrutiny. Warren blamed large corporations for caring more about their bottom lines than their employees and says her accountable capitalism plan would fix that.
It says you want to have one of the giant corporations in America, then by golly,
40% of your board of directors should be elected by your employees. That'll make a difference when a corporation decides, gee, we could save a nickel by moving a job to Mexico.
President Trump was also the target of criticism, especially over his recent decision to pull U.S. troops from northern Syria. New details about the high-level unease over President Trump's actions toward Ukraine and those of his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, are coming out of the impeachment inquiry. Lawmakers attending closed-door interviews say witnesses, mainly of them officials from the State Department and other foreign policy posts, are largely corroborating the account of the government whistleblower whose complaints sparked the investigation. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff says the White House is still withholding documents it's legally required to turn over to Congress.
Bill Barr's Justice Department, when a referral was made to the Justice Department, said, there's nothing to see here, and we don't even want to look. Because the fundamental attitude of the Attorney General is the president is above the law.
The office of Vice President Mike Pence declined to comply with a records request from House committees, while Giuliani says he does not intend to comply with a congressional subpoena for documents. How are those super long flights going to affect travelers? We're about to find out. Qantas will fly direct from New York to Sydney this weekend, 20 straight hours, and is going to gather information along the way. Scientists and medical researchers in the cabin will turn the Dreamliner into a high-altitude lab. They'll screen the brains of the pilots for alertness while monitoring the food, sleep, and activity of a few dozen passengers to see how they hold up during the ordeal.
Man. Oh, now that's one of those, it might be worth it to splurge for first class, because 20 hours in a coach seat.
No way.
Oh, it's really
no way.
Comes down to your price point and your pain point, something like that. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. A mom in Jacksonville, Florida, won't soon forget to kiss her family goodbye when she goes to work after her two-year-old called her out. Diana Simos posted a funny video on Facebook of her little boy complaining to dad that the whole family did not get a proper goodbye from her. She wrote on Facebook, "After Alexander's soccer practice, I was in such a hurry to get back to work, and my baby Alex was very upset he didn't get the proper goodbye. So then leave it to dad to capture it all on what's now become a viral video. Alexander is in disbelief over mom's hasty departure."
You wanted to give her a kiss?
I did.
And she just went to work?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Facebook weighed in. One person joked, "Mommy, you are in big trouble when you get home." For the record, Diana said she made sure to give Alexander his kisses when she got home. She included the hashtag, "I made it up to him, though." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
I'm not a big talker. I am a big doer. But sometimes the only way to solve the problem is to get on the horn and figure it out. So the only people I like talking to? Grainger. With knowledgeable product experts, ready with the answers to my toughest questions, calling Grainger is the one conversation I don't mind having. From machining and motor parts to valves and vacuum pumps. When it comes to solving my problems, Grainger's got my back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.